You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini, educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with the Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I've got Mike Hambright. Mike, how you doing?
I'm great, Ken. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing very good. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Absolutely.
So I'm actually returning the favor with Mike. Mike actually had me on his show a couple months back on Flip Nerd, and he was kind enough to come on our show. Mike's also another member that is in my Collective Genius group, our mastermind. He's out of the Dallas market, and if you're familiar with Flip Nerd, it's also not just a podcast, but it's also become a website, and we'll talk a little bit more about that here in a little bit. But Mike, I would love for you to take us back to the very beginning. How did you get into real estate?
Sure, yeah. It's an interesting story when kind of looking in hindsight. So my wife and I started in the summer of 2008, which if you remember, Ken, you know, the markets were kind of crashing everywhere.
Oh yeah, I remember.
It wasn't real bad in Dallas where we were at, but here's the funny thing is in hindsight, like we had no idea. We were totally naive to kind of what was going on. So I'll kind of come back to that in a minute, but, kind of how we got there was, we kind of referred to ourselves as corporate refugees. So my wife was a consultant, and I had worked for a number of really large retailers that everybody would know. And what happened was, I was working for, one of the, a very large retailer. I worked actually directly for the CEO, and, I was kind of a made man. I mean, it was just an awesome experience, exposure to a lot of, you know, incredible stuff at such a young age. And then, you know, there was no limit. I mean, I never thought I'd be with one company for potentially my whole career or for a long period of time, but I could essentially do whatever I wanted just because of the relationship I had with the top guy. And then, one day kind of out of nowhere, unexpectedly, he got fired. And then, you know, I'm his outspoken right-hand man that, you know, had no shield now. So, you know, guess who was next in line?
Wow.
So I left there, and then I went to work for another retailer that was a startup. I say it was a startup, but they had climbed up to like $400 million in sales. So actually just doing really well, very small team, just killing it, and went there for about 18 months and just tore it up. I mean, it was exciting, tons of growth, lots of acquisitions going on, really cool stuff. My wife was pregnant with our son, and she was probably around 6 months pregnant. And then the writing became very clear on the wall that they were about to file bankruptcy. And so it was like, oh, crap. So got to left there. So she had left her job, by the way, at that point. Mm-hmm. And so I was the sole breadwinner, and I'm sure you remember back how this feels.
Oh yeah.
Where all of a sudden you've got the responsibility of taking care of a wife, and you know, at the time I only have one son, but you know, we'd never had any real responsibilities before to like take care of each other or take care of certainly a child. And so just this kind of realization of, man, I'm not safe at a big company, not safe at a startup. I have, you know, no control over my kind of financial destiny or my family's destiny, you know, future. My wife left her job. Quite frankly, she was making more money than me. And so I'm in this position of, you know, I've got to be a provider here. And, the thing that I've always been very entrepreneurial, but I never had owned my own business. And, there was just something inside of me that said, the only way that you're going to be able to be a provider is if you have full control, and that's by doing your own thing.
No doubt.
And so, I'd always had an interest in real estate investing, like always from, you know, back when I was little watching This Old House, you know, just which really has nothing to do with real estate investing, but just the interest in kind of fixing things up and doing things. And not that I wanted to, you know, do that myself personally, but so it was just this kind of perfect storm of got to figure out something to do. We dove into real estate investing, and I wear a few different hats, like a lot of, you know, like you do and a lot of other folks that are kind of more veteran real estate investors. So at the time, and still today, we are franchisees with Homebesters that we buy ugly houses, folks. So that's how we got started. We had literally never bought a house in our lives. And because we had done fairly well before we, you know, left corporate America, we had kind of a high opportunity cost. So I couldn't just go figure out how to do it on my own and dabble with it and give it, you know, time to see what was happening. I had a newborn son at the time. And, so we bought a franchise because it allowed us, you know, the learning curve was just substantially shorter. It just allowed us to ramp up quickly. And so, really in light of the fact that it was like, by most measures, a terrible time to get into real estate investing, which actually turned out to be a good time for us. And having no experience, we ended up buying 65 houses in our first year.
Wow. Holy
and,
cow.
So a lot of that is because of the system that we're a part of and I'm a mentor and coach for now. But a lot of it too really is just hard work. Like we, because of the story that I just told you, you know, failure just was not an option that we could accept. And so we just worked our tails off. And, you know, it was a different time too. I mean, the good part about that time in 2008 with the market kind of crashing is a lot of the competition was gone. So, you know, competition wasn't as fierce. We were fortunate to have access to some relationships to get money at some local banks and kind of friend and family type money. And so a lot of people that had their credit lines pulled away, you know, now we had access to some capital that allowed us to have a leg up where we could buy with confidence and not worry about where am I going to get the money for this. And so, you know, it was kind of a perfect storm of all those things. But yeah, that's the surprisingly, that is the short version of my story about kind of how we got started in real estate investing.
So 65 houses in your first year, were these houses that you were just fixing and flipping or were you wholesaling or what was your model?
Yeah, we were, you know, at the time we were kind of roughly 50-50 wholesaling and rehabbing. I kind of, it's funny, when we first started, I just wanted to rehab everything. I wanted to fix it up and sell it and didn't really have a lot of awareness of kind of wholesaling and assigning. But immediately realized that, you know, that's got to be a part of your mix to just generate quicker cash to kind of fund your operations for sure. So,
yeah.
And there's, of course, there's always some houses that, you know, never in a million years should you consider rehabbing it because it's in a low end area or, you know, just especially at that time, you know, you had to be concerned about selling in too low end of an area because folks that live in those neighborhoods, you know, couldn't get a mortgage. So, you know, there's a lot of other solutions for that, keeping as rentals or seller financing and stuff. We didn't do any of that at that time, but yeah, so it was kind of a mix of 50-50.
Interesting. Well, and that's interesting. So 2008, I mean, I started in 2005, so I very much remember 2008. It seemed like even in Atlanta, a lot of the HomeVestors guys disappeared for a little bit, really because you didn't have to acquire properties off market. You really, the MLS was littered with just super cheap properties. Mm-hmm. What was, were you buying off the MLS or were you really buying you know, off market stuff when you first started?
Yeah. So I would say, up until now we for several years, we were buying 60 or 70 houses a year because our business has evolved and we have rental properties and other businesses, the Flip Nerd business and my coaching business. We have all these other kind of things now. We don't do that much volume anymore, but you know, if we've bought somewhere around a little bit north of 300 houses in the past, 7 years or so since we've been doing this. And so I think three of those were off the MLS.
Oh, wow.
So holy the MLS cow. Was just never a tool for us. And we tried and it just wasn't a good tool for us. I think that's very kind of market specific.
Yeah.
Because there weren't a tremendous amount of, you know, foreclosures, relatively speaking, in the Dallas and Fort Worth market because it was so much more stable than a lot of other markets. But it was just never a vehicle for us, really. And, you know, you say it kind of a lot of the HomeVestors guys went away, but it was really kind of that was across the board. It wasn't just HomeVestors people. It was all franchise, or, you know,
absolutely.
All,
yep.
Investors, right? That, and a lot of it's because, you know, people had overpaid for inventory and they were upside down and people lost access to credit lines and stuff like that. And so, you know, no matter what your brand is or who you kind of fly under, those things kind of impact everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's funny because I was sort of the same thing. I was still coming up sort of into my own in 2008. And I didn't have a big real estate portfolio to lose. And so all these people that I looked up to, all these, you know, competitors, they just disappeared overnight. I mean, they just folded up and all of a sudden you've got all these amazing properties to choose from and not a lot of competition. And I think Atlanta was different than Dallas too, in that everything was on the MLS. I mean, that's all we bought from was the MLS. So the HomeVestors guys and the other guys that were pursuing properties that were off market at the time, you know, their business model sort of dried up because you could get a better deal on the MLS, believe it or not. But that probably wasn't the case in Dallas. Dallas probably didn't get hit. I'm sure you didn't have nearly as many foreclosures as we did in Atlanta at the time.
Right, right.
So that business model was still relevant for you. So fast forward. So you've done 300 some houses over the last so many years. What else? So you mentioned some other businesses. What other things have you kind of developed?
Well, we have about 40 rental properties, and we have a coaching business. So I recruit new franchisees into the Home Investor system, and then we mentor and coach them. So I have around 70 franchisees that are kind of on my team across the country.
Awesome.
And that keeps us pretty busy. And then, of course, we launched, you know, flipnerd.com. I started the show at the beginning of 2014, and we have recorded almost 250, it's actually 245 expert interviews. You were the best one, Ken, by the
Absolutely way. Absolutely the best one, I mean, yeah.
You just shattered the mold. During what a lot of people, you know, maybe don't know is that during that whole time, since we started the podcast, for a year and a half, we actually were building a very custom and very expensive web platform that is live now, flipnerd.com. And that actually just, despite the fact that we've, you know, been doing the shows for, I guess, 20 months now, we just launched kind of the real site that we had planned from day one about 4 months ago. So we just actually hit, just earlier this week, we hit 10,000 registered members on the site. And then I was telling you that we were about to hit 500 wholesale deals. In fact, when we started, right before we started the show, I looked and it was 499. And so we've got a lot of off-market deals, you know, on the site across the country, which is pretty exciting because that's the biggest draw to our site, is we've effectively kind of become the MLS type platform for off-market deals, and we're the only national platform that does that. So
what's the big picture for flipnerd.com? What's your goal in bringing investors to that platform?
Yeah, you know, I think I've always my background, I've always been very kind of social. Like, I've always been a connector and always wanted to like learn from other people or teach other people things that I know, bring people together. And, you know, that's not really how the real estate space typically is. A lot of people are lone wolves and kind of doing their own thing and don't share any of their, you know, so-called trade secrets or anything with anybody. That's actually, you know, because of technology, I think certainly with podcasts, that's actually changed a lot. You and I know, you know, all the kind of top guys that are doing this, and they're very open to sharing. But my gut tells me that you were the same, and, you know, the Joe McCalls of the world, Sean Terry, all those guys were the same, in that it's like you get to a point where you're like, I need to share this with people. I need to, you know, there's something missing from your business to where you want to socialize more and learn more and meet people. Mm-hmm. And so that's really the crux of, you know, how this started. Several years before the Flipnerd platform started, I started doing some kind of rehab seminars. I called it Rehab Live. So I'd have actually people in my market in Dallas. I'd let them come meet me at a house and kind of teach them. They would watch us rehab a house. So we basically meet three times. We'd meet, you know, we would pick kind of the nastiest houses that are hoarder houses and just, you know, need a ton of work. Mm-hmm. And so we would meet right at the beginning before we've done anything with the house in all of its, you know, nasty glory. Mm-hmm. And then we'd meet again, you know, 2 weeks later, halfway through, and then we meet again 2 weeks later at the end. And just people could experience a flip this house type, you know, experience, but actually live and see it and smell it and everything for themselves. Right.
Sure.
And so I, you know, I would send out messages, through my local RIA group or things like that. And next thing you know, we might have like 30, 40, 50 people just show up at a house, and it was cool. It was a great experience. People are like, why'd you do that? Why, you know, how much did you spend on that? Or just kind of sharing the experience, that I had become, you know, kind of, it had just gotten kind of, boring, you know. I mean, it might be funny for people to hear that, but, you know, when you're in the rehab business, like you get to a point to where on your first, you know, first many deals, you're like involved, you're out there checking on it, you're doing all these things. And then to really run it like a business, it needs to get to a point to where you can minimize the number of times you have to go there, mm-hmm. and you minimize, you know, changes from one project to the next. So you're doing the same colors, the same tile, mm-hmm. everything's the same. And you want to try to get it. I mean, you know, the dirty little secret about this business is, if done properly, it's an extremely boring business, right? It's just, things just kind of happen. But you don't have all this drama where you have to go figure out something different on every single house. You want to kind of systematize it and
right.
get operations down to where, as the owner, you are, you know, minimizing how much time you have to put into each project. And so that kind of allowed me to rejuvenate my interest in it, which was just by kind of teaching people. And I really, you know, I really enjoyed it, and people got a lot out of it. And so then the next step was like, well, how do I do this so where I'm not restricted by my market and the number of people that can meet at like 5:30 on a weeknight after work because they've got families and stuff like that. So we kind of took it online and started doing some stuff like that online where I literally had a videographer that would come follow me around to different houses and we'd kind of document it and then share it online. And that just kind of evolved into the podcast and then the platform, which was just some way to bring people together to share the best knowledge that's out there. People can share deals and find vendors and all those things that real estate investors need in a place that's kind of safe and, you know, ethical and just brings the best out in this industry because there's a lot of really kind of negative parts of this industry too. So,
sure.
You know, there just wasn't a place like this at all. There's some people that, you know, we would say are maybe competitors and they have bits and pieces of what we do. But I think there's nobody that kind of brings it all together the way that we are.
That's the thing is, you know, it's a very pieced and parceled together business, wholesaling. You know, in any given market, there might be 20 or 30 wholesalers and you might be on their list, you might not be on their list, but there's not a good central repository for advertising wholesale deals. And that's really what you've tried to do, it seems like, on a national level.
Yeah. I mean, the cool thing is, you know, it's free to join, but we do have what's called a pro account that we're offering a special right now for just $10 a month. So for $10 a month, you can become a pro. And the great thing about that is in your market, you will receive real-time email alerts of new properties that are listed. So like, man, where I'm at in the Dallas market, it's one of our bigger markets, but I probably get 5 to 10 deals a day on average, new deals that are coming out. So I'm getting email alerts. They're not as relevant for me because it's my platform, but for other investors that are here, it's like, that's awesome to get real-time alerts. And if you have deals to sell, you know, how cool is that you could get to post them on a website for free and they get emailed out directly to other investors in your market?
That's pretty slick. So if I'm in there and I'm interested in getting deals, can I set like what city and what county or how does that work?
So we have predefined markets. That's probably one of the more confusing things about the site is our markets are, we used a government metric called a core-based statistical area, which everybody just kind of glazed over when they heard that.
Right.
But what you do is you put in a zip code in your market, and then it kind of snaps you into a predefined market. So Atlanta, for example, is you would just add a zip code for that you operate in Atlanta, and it would snap you into that entire Atlanta market, for example.
Gotcha.
Anything that happens within that market, if you want to receive them, you receive real-time alerts.
And as a pro member, I'm assuming I get those alerts before they go live on the site, or how does that work?
Well, that is something actually that we're about to change. So we're adding a bunch of new value to the pro membership. In fact, it's going to go up to $37 a month here in the next 60 days. And anybody that joins now will actually be grandfathered into the pro. So it'd be $10 a month forever instead of $37 a month. So that'll be awesome. But what we're going to do then is for free users at that point, they won't see the property for 24 hours. So it won't be on the site and they won't get an alert at all ever. So it'll be delayed. So that will definitely kind of start to separate the different membership levels.
Very cool. I mean, for those folks that are posting wholesale deals or looking for wholesale deals, which is me, we're sort of on both sides. We're posting wholesale all the time, but I'm always browsing what other wholesalers have because occasionally I buy through wholesalers. I mean, and it's only growing. So to get in now and then watch this thing take off, I mean, it's a great platform to plug into. You guys are also, looks like, getting a little bit into some of the education space as well on the site. What is that going to look like?
Well, we have we're creating, I won't say education in the sense that we're selling some sort of training program
right.
that promises you anything. Right. But what we'll do for pro members is have kind of mini lesson plans, and it'll be by people that, you know, a lot of people that I've had on the show before that might come back that are experts that are going to teach about, you know, how to use virtual assistants to help improve your business. And might be a multi-part kind of training thing where it's some combination of videos and could be some documents you print out. And so a number of things like that is kind of the direction that we're moving in. So it won't be that we're, you know, necessarily kind of selling training. It would be just if you're a pro member, you get access to some premium content, if you will.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you guys also are promoting a summit that's coming up. What does that look like?
So REI Power Summit, we just opened up the door. So that it's not until November, but we do have the sales are open right now, and I don't know when this show will air, Ken, but we have a early bird special that actually ends on 8/31. So not sure exactly when this is coming out, but REIPowerSummit.com, we're giving $100 off in the event that somebody buys a ticket before 8/31, and then prices go up $100. But yeah, we have over 50 committed speakers, lots of, you know, really big name folks that are going to be speaking and teaching there. We have a number of different workshops that people are going to, you know, teach on some of the same things I just mentioned, you know, how to use virtual assistants, how to build wealth through retirement accounts. And it's just a fantastic event. And the great thing is it's 100% virtual. So I think one of the challenges a lot of people have is geography. It's like you have to take a weekend away from your family and travel and all that stuff to go to events like this. But ours is actually a 9-day event. I don't think I told you that, Ken. A 9-day event.
Holy cow.
Where there's going to be over, like I said, over 50 speakers, workshops, some panels, a number of really incredible people that have great things to teach. But it's over the course of 9 days. But you'll have access to it for 12 months. So the beauty of kind of doing this virtually and having all the videos is that we can continue to share that with people for 12 months. So if you say, hey, I'm going to be on vacation that week, so I can't go, well, the reality is you're going to get access to it for a year afterwards. So you could effectively watch it anytime you want. So, REIPowerSummit.com if anybody's interested in that.
And what platform are you using for people to view the videos or to watch as they're streamed?
Well, it's a number of different things based on whether they're panels or things. So it's a little little complicated. But that is our burden. It's like if you have a physical event, you're worried about setting up booths and hotel space and parking and all that stuff. Our burden is more of the technology side of figuring out how to create a seamless experience for people. And so there's some things we're still figuring out here. But yeah, we're definitely focused on making this just a world-class event that'll be one of the biggest real estate investing events ever because it's virtual, because we have so many great kind of speakers and participants there, and because we're going to give access to people for 12 months. You know, we're going to hopefully really separate ourselves from anything else that's out there.
Man, that's very cool. So that's REIPowerSummit.com.
That's right.
Yep. I'll make sure this airs before 8/31 so people have a chance to sign up. Man. Well, let's transition real quick into your best deal. You've done over 300 houses over the last so many years. Is there a deal that stands out in some way as special or cool or creative that we could talk about?
Yeah, I think, you know, rather than kind of hold up a big check or kind of brag about, you know, the most financially or profitable deal ever, I'd like to share a recent experience just to kind of hopefully teach a lesson here about the importance of follow-up.
Oh, awesome.
And staying with it. And so there's a house that we actually just sold it last week, but so we obviously bought it a month or so before that. But we had made our offer on that house, our first offer on that house, 52 months before we got our contract to actually buy it just a couple months ago here.
Holy
and God. So, you know, what we did was, and I use virtual assistants for a lot of my follow-up. We have a really structured kind of process of ultimately ends up with following up monthly via email, calls, things like that. So yeah, we made our first offer. They said, you know, no way. You know, everybody has seen these stats, but it's something like this is not specific to real estate, but across the board in sales, that something like 70% of people only make one call. And that the average sale takes, you know, 4 calls or 5 calls. And so if you're not, you know, doing all that follow-up, then you're missing out on a lot of opportunity.
Yep.
And so I don't know the exact – I don't have the stats in front of me, but it's significant.
Yep. I just saw something similar that somebody put out there, and I've seen that in presentations before. That, yeah. How many people give up after the first or second call?
Yeah. So roughly speaking, you know, 52 months, we followed up with this person 52 times, so thereabouts. And so if you look – when we look back at our notes in our CRM – I see, you know, called, left message, called, left message, called, left message, and, you know, called and the number was disconnected. So again, these are our virtual assistants that are doing this. So if it was me calling, I probably would give up after 2 or 3 calls. Because we've kind of, built a process around it and it's somebody's actual job to do it, they just follow up like clockwork. They just call and leave a message, set a task, do it again in 30 days, do it again in 30 days. And even when people say, we decided not to sell it. We decided we're just going to rehab it ourselves. We decided we're not going to make a decision now. Or just if you see all these messages in there, the one thing that they never told us to do was stop calling. And so if they told us to stop calling, we'd stop calling. But we continued, they never said that. So we continued to follow up. And then all of a sudden you see, if it's just whenever I get a deal, I always go back and I look at the history, because there's always history. Like, it's never as clean as I made an offer today and I bought it tomorrow. It's never that clean.
Right.
But, you know, it was like all of a sudden at the time we got the contract, we called and they said, well, if you could give me this price, I'll sell it, which was just a few thousand higher than what we offered. And so it's just out of nowhere. It's like the clouds just part and somebody says, and something's kind of back in play, you know? And, so we ended up actually buying it for less than what we offered 52 months earlier, gosh. So they would have been obviously a lot better off if they had just sold it over 4 years ago at the price that we had offered. And then we sold it within a few weeks, after that. But, anyway, just thought I'd kind of share that lesson of the importance of follow up and how you can have, a lot more deals if you just focus on working with what you already have.
Absolutely. It's so key and critical to, especially people that are chasing down motivated sellers, to stay on them over and over and over again. Drip on them with email, drip on them with text. It sounds like you got a system set up for actually calling, which is pretty interesting. What does that look like real quick? I'm just curious.
It's literally just our virtual assistants. We have one guy that his job is just to follow up, and we have, in our CRM, we probably have 600 or 700 old leads that we're just following up on and just calling them all monthly. So like I said, his process is just to call, and just see, have you sold the house yet? 90% of the time, we're not even getting a hold of people. You're getting a voicemail, or sometimes the number's disconnected. And so that's kind of the burden of the monotony of doing that yourself, that would wear me out personally. But
yeah.
If I have somebody that's their job and that's all they do, and they have to report to complete a report every day that says, these are all the people I called and here's what happened. But they just put it in our CRM. Like, he'll come in and he'll see all the people that he'd scheduled a task for roughly 30 days ago. And today's the day to, call all these people. And when he calls and leaves voicemails today or finds out whatever they want to do, if they want to schedule another appointment to talk again, he'll schedule that appropriately. But if we call and leave a message, or if the number's disconnected or anything like that, he'll effectively just set a task for 30 days that says, do it again.
Is he a US-based VA?
No, Philippines.
Really? So he speaks good English. I guess the only thing I'd be concerned about is if all of a sudden he got a hold of somebody and they want to engage, I guess he just says, well, let me set up a phone call for you. He doesn't.
Yeah, we set up an appointment with our buyer that is, a local kind of salesperson that would go out and meet with him. So,
okay.
Yeah, so we don't really spend a lot of time talking to him. It's more of just trying to see, is an opportunity open up to meet with one of our representatives, basically.
I gotcha. Man, there is no doubt that it is, sales are absolutely in the follow up. And something like 80% of sales. I saw the same statistic, 80% of sales or something like that happen after 5 touches or something crazy like that.
Right.
And so
right.
Few people are touching people more than once or twice.
Yep, absolutely.
So that's great. That is a great lesson. Hey, so Mike, talk to us real quick. Where people want to know more about your podcast, they want to know about the site, where would we direct them?
Yeah, if you primarily listen to podcasts, you can, we distribute it on iTunes, obviously, and then a whole bunch of other Android-based ones like Stitcher Radio and stuff. But you just do a search for Flip Nerd. We actually have, technically, we have 4 different shows right now, but that is, we have really kind of 2 show types. One is the expert interview show, where I interview guests like Ken here, and then the other one is kind of an expert tip show. So also guys like Ken would share just quick tips. So that one tends to be 2 or 3 minutes long, and you get tips from. We have about 200 tip videos, and then the interview show, we are approaching 250, and those tend to be around 30 minutes long. But you could just do a search for Flip Nerd in iTunes or Stitcher or anywhere else, or you can watch the videos on flipnerd.com as well. We have all of our video shows there. So yeah, check out the shows there. And if you are looking for more deals, looking to build community, looking to find vendors in your market that work with real estate investors, flipnerd.com is a great place to be.
Perfect. So again, folks, we'll put this on the show notes, flipnerd.com, also reipowersummit.com, which is in November if you guys are interested in attending that. Mike, thanks so much, man. This was fantastic.
Great talking to you, Ken.
All right. Talk to you soon. Take care. Hey, Deal Farm podcast listeners, this is Ken Corsini with a special offer. If you go to our website right now, dealfarm.net, you have the ability to download our new blueprint. It's called 30 Days to 10K. It's basically the exact blueprint you need to start profiting from wholesaling real estate right now. It's the resources, it's the websites, it's the services that we use. I've even included my exact postcard that I send out. Basically everything you need to start getting deals in the next 30 days. Again, it's at our website, dealfarm.net. Check it out. You can download it for free. Also, we still have our free t-shirt offer. If you want a free Deal Farm podcast t-shirt, just subscribe through iTunes to our podcast and give us a 5-star rating, and then go through our website, contact us, give us your name, address, and t-shirt size, and we will send you a t-shirt in the mail immediately. As always, thanks so much for listening to the Deal Farm. We'll see you on the next episode. Take care.